just fade away. An old soldier who tried to do his duty as God gave him the light to see that duty. Goodbye.
You are listening to Hear It Now, CBS's weekly document for air based on the week's news. The program continues immediately after this pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Like gabardine, you love Plateau. It's the famous suit with a weightless feel made only by Timely Clothes. Exclusive in the Twin Cities at Pat Kane's. Stop at 202 North Neal, Champaign, and ask for a Plateau suit. Try it on. You'll feel the difference. You'll see the difference. Yes, at last, here's what you've been waiting for. A Plateau suit made by Timely Clothes. Visit Pat King's.
19 on Hear It Now. A full-hour review of the week's news, told in the actual recorded voices of the men and women who make the news. And tonight, a special tribute to the late Senator Vandenberg. Once again, here is the editor of Hear It Now, Edward R. Murrow.
In Korea, the U.N. line continued to inch slowly forward, with all of its salients, except the extreme western one, slightly above the 38th parallel. But talk of communist troop movements in the north continued, with extremely large air potentials being massed in Manchuria. These were the conditions under which Lieutenant General Ridgway, who had arrived in Korea at its darkest hour, left to take up the commands left vacant by General MacArthur. Matt Ridgway, as he left the front.
Secretary Pace and I heard of it together, that we were up at a forward battalion command post about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Was that the first word you had had?
Yes, it was. Secretary Pace had not given you any warning.
None whatever. I haven't any plans for anything at present. This thing just hit me yesterday afternoon. I went over immediately to report to General MacArthur, and I hope to get back here and keep my finger on the pulse of this situation is now in progress up front.
But there were other sounds on the Korean battlefront.
Charge, First Cavalry! Charge!
In the States, Goodnight Irene is already a little passé. In Korea, it's the hit of the week. Especially the slightly abridged and rewritten chorus as sung by the 1st Cavalry Division Band.
Irene, good night. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I'll see you in my dreams.
Sometimes she sleeps in pajamas. Sometimes she sleeps in a gown, but when they're both in the laundry, Irene is the talk of the town.
The United Nations continued to strive for a ceasefire agreement in Korea, but without press information and without much apparent success. Although a transient peace feeler from Beiping seemed genuine enough to interest that old veteran of the peace table, Winston Churchill.
Tonight, we have good news from Korea. It may be only a report, but I read it just before I came in here. If it be true that the North Koreans have asked for peace terms, that would be a relief and satisfaction to every one of us. Neither we nor the United States nor the United Nations have the slightest wish to become involved in Korea or in China. Far graver dangers loom in Europe. If the news be true, we must pay our tribute to the United States in the first instance, for they have borne 9/10 of the burden and suffered 19/20 of the loss.
But Mr. Churchill was over-eager. It was just more of the same communist peace propaganda. A gory document, the State Department called it. There were other suggestions on swift ways of ending the Korean War. Representative Albert Gore of Tennessee wanted to build a sort of atomic ditch across Korea.
How long can we continue swapping men with the Chinese communists? I think something cataclysmic is called for. We have it. I think we should use it. And that is some of the immense weapons that have been developed by the Atomic Energy Commission as a result of $5 billion expenditure of American taxpayers. I suggest, therefore, that first, we remove all Koreans from a belt across the narrow Korean Peninsula, and then dehumanize that belt by surface radiological contamination. Just before this is accomplished, broadcast the fact to the enemy with ample and particular notice that entrance into the belt would mean certain death or slow deformity to all soldiers.
We asked Dr. Ralph Lapp, former director of the Nuclear Physics Branch of the Office of Naval Research and one of the top scientists in the field, to comment on this atomic moat.
First, as to whether it's feasible, that depends upon how much land you want to contaminate, how radioactive you wish to make it, and how long you want the poison to last. Certainly, we have lots of radioactive material produced as a useless byproduct in our atomic energy plants. So, as a matter of fact, you might jump to the conclusion that it is feasible. But in my opinion, the technical problems involved in packaging and delivering this material are very nasty. Furthermore, you must define just what tactical use you wish to make of this weapon. A square mile of land will take about 1 million curies, and that's a lot of radioactivity, to kill a man in 1 week if he stands in one place. A soldier could run across a mile of land in about 10 minutes, and he would not suffer any ill effect. As to Congressman Gore's statement, I deplore such speculation because I can see no good resulting from it. In fact, the radioactive weapon is, to my mind, chiefly of psychological value, and as such it boomerangs upon us, not upon the masses of Chinese communists in Korea.
This week, true to spring tradition, hundreds of grandmothers, apparently in the prime of health, conveniently died. Hundreds of office boys piously asked for the afternoon off. Hundreds of bosses who years ago had pulled the same act themselves found it hard to say no. And in many a ballpark this week, the boss and his office boy found themselves separated by only a few seats. The 1951 baseball season was about to get underway. Next year had become this year. And the pennant winner and eighth place club were again starting from scratch. Diamond fever and hopes ran high. You could chart it by the sound of the turnstiles at Yankee Stadium as the crowds poured in. And by this familiar voice at the stadium.
Peanuts here, scorecard here. Peanuts, peanuts here, peanuts here. Peanuts, scorecard.
And this sound our many recorders picked up at Wrigley Field in Chicago.
Hey, Red Hot. Hot dog sandwich, Red Hot. Red Hot, anybody over here want a Red Hot? Don't you ever buy anything?
There were snow flurries at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, and the band caught the mood. In Cincinnati, the bat boy, Danny Boyle, was interviewed before the game began.
Dan, this is your first year.
Yes, sir.
Is this pretty much of a thrill for you?
Yes, sir.
Aren't you sort of carrying on a tradition? You're from Elder High School here in Cincinnati, and they've had quite a few of the bat boys from Elder.
Yes, sir.
Danny, do you look forward to being a major league ball player like your dad someday?
Yes, sir.
And this is a real thrill for you. Are you going to, what's your favorite position?
Shortstop.
Shortstop, you're going to get some chances to work out, is that so?
Yes, sir.
Well, Dan, you root real hard and keep those bats in pretty good shape today and see if you can't make the Reds come through. Will you do that?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. In St. Louis, the Browns and White Sox warmed up to music, psychologically keyed to soothe opening day nerves. And in Boston, the sports writers were already sending out stories for the first editions of the afternoon papers. In Philadelphia, the Athletics talked in the dugout. This is what our recorder heard.
Can't beat the hours, can you? Every afternoon, 2 to 4. Too bad you didn't play at Honus Wagner's day.
And in Pittsburgh, Honus Wagner, one of the great shortstops of all time, turned the clock back, too.
The whole time, rookie, though, he had a tough time breaking in. The regulars wouldn't let him go up to hit and take their turn. And they wouldn't even talk to the young fellow. I know I played 2 years before anybody talked to me. And then one of the outfielders in New York Giants hit 2 home runs. As he passed me, I said, "Nice hitting there, Gore." He turned around and took a look at me. He said, "How'd you like to go to it?" And another thing, the treat as far as the salary is concerned. My first contract called for $35 a month. And I asked for 40. He said, "Either come for 35 or stay home."
For the successful rookie of today, times have changed. He's paid well, travels in style and comfort, and you can't beat the hours. This is an intimate moment we recorded at Penn Station. Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle, the game's outstanding star and most publicized rookie, both Yankees, about to leave for Washington and opening day.
Well, Mickey, this is another season for me. Of course, this is your first season here in the major leagues. How do you feel about this first trip or the first game you're going to play?
Well, Joe, I'm pretty nervous about it all, and it's all really new to me, I'll tell you.
Well, I'll tell you, Mickey, you know, I felt pretty nervous the first game I played. As a matter of fact, I can recall I missed 17 games the opening of the season, and finally when I got back in there, when I did play my first game, I swung at the first pitch and was very fortunate to get a base hit, and that took all the tension out. Now, are you going to do the same thing for us?
I don't know. I'll probably swing at the first pitch no matter where they throw it, but I don't know whether I'll get a hit.
And I hope it's a hit, Mickey, because believe me, from there on in, you'll go from there.
But behind the stands in Brooklyn, another rookie, Jim Romano, is surprised and stunned on opening day. The club secretary breaks the news. Listen.
Jim, you know, you've been optioned back to the St. Paul Club, and you're going to have to pitch down there for a month or so. You don't feel discouraged about being sent to St. Paul, do you?
Well, no, Hal, I'm not discouraged. I'm disappointed because I think I can do just as well, maybe better, than a lot of pitchers you have on the staff.
The starting pitchers warm up on opening day. And in Brooklyn, manager Charlie Dressen talks to his Dodgers before the game as the band parades outside the clubhouse.
There's only one thing I demand of you this season. That's for 154 games starting today. And that's hustle. And that means on the field and off the field. Today is the day that we really start. Everything we do starting today counts. If we can keep from making mistakes and make the other club make them, we're bound to win.
In Philadelphia, Connie Mack, after 50 years of baseball, sits in the stands for the first time. How does it feel, Mr. Mack?
Well, I'm very happy and in sitting in the stands. I'm going to play the game very hard, and I hope that Jimmy Dykes will do a good job.
In Chicago, the fans, waiting for the first pitch, get into the spirit of things. And at Yankee Stadium, the groundskeepers get ready, too.
I'll hold the flag, and it'll go up for me. Make sure that everything is clear. The main thing is to keep the flag clear of the pole. So I think it'll go all right. The only thing we have to worry about is the wind and how to spread out in front of the monuments. We'll have to spread way out because the flag is so big we have to steer clear of the pole.
At the stadium and elsewhere, the prelude to the start of the game.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please rise? Miss Lucy Monroe, accompanied by Major Francis W. Sutherland, 7th Regiment Band, will sing our national anthem.
After that, the umpires walk onto the field. In Chicago, we ask Art Passarelli if he minds the good-natured booing.
Well, of course, after all, they paid their money to get in the ballpark, and they got a right to holler when they want to.
It's almost game time, opening day. Brooklyn manager Charlie Dressen talks to his catcher, Roy Campanella, in the dugout.
We've got all these signs straight now. Do you understand everything?
Yes, we have, Skipper.
Well, now, all you got to do, Roy, remember what I told you about that finesse. When they're looking for a curve, you throw them a fast one. When they're looking for the fast one, throw them the curve. And if they're looking for either one of them, give them a change of pace, you know, maybe a high neck end. Will you do that?
Other words, just push the right button, not the right time.
That's right, Roy. Keep that thumb out of the way, and let's start today.
Well, I'll do my best, Skipper.
The Dodgers take the field. In Detroit's Briggs Stadium, Patsy O'Toole has paid his money and wants some action.
Okay, Detroit Tigers, let's go! Everybody get a hit! Everybody stand still! Let's get going!
Around the country, there's the same familiar cry. We happen to catch it in Chicago.
Play ball!
Millions of fans who didn't have grandmothers or sympathetic bosses caught snatches of the game on radio and TV.
And now we're ready to get going at Yankee Stadium. Vic Grassi looks in to get the sign. Leans forward, starts the windup. Around comes the arm. The first pitch is high inside for ball one. and he's into the windup. And here's the pitch for Dixon. It's a curve, and it's over for a call strike. Bickford gets ready to throw that first one. And it's a strike call.
Killer has his sign, stops into the windup. Here's the first pitch, and it's a ball, a little bit high. Ball one, the season's underway.